You're listening to Ben Davis Giants Football on WBDG, Indianapolis.
Hey, let's go! It's
going to be fourth down, last play of the game, barring a penalty.
It all comes down to this.
Open your action.
Victory will not be handed to you.
Tom Allen jumping up and down, getting everybody into it. One play.
Number one, Ben Davis Football is physical. Number one, Ben Davis Football is hit.
Who's going to go home?
All you seniors. Will you let this be taken away from you?
No way. You must go seize the moment.
It's going to come down to the signal. Touchdown, Ben Davis. Touchdown, Ben Davis. The Giants win.
I am honored every day to put on something that says Ben Davis Football. I am honored.
When you hit the door, you're a Ben Davis Giant.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Inside Ben Davis Football presented by Chuck Bear Carpenter Realtors. My name is Owen Pulley, alongside General Manager of WBDG, John Easter, and of course, your head coach of the Ben Davis Giants, Coach Jason Simmons. Good to have you guys for this fall break, heading into the last week edition of Inside Ben Davis Football. So, Coach, played on Friday. Nothing really important happened. You know, keep it short. We're going to go to a quick break and then preview the North Central game. Nothing really happened. Of course, keeping it serious, Ben Davis comes back to win 29-28. Run us through Friday night.
Shoot, it's really a tale of two halves when you look at it from a scoreboard perspective. I think when you look at it from a coach's lens and you look at you look at the whole thing from a offensive perspective, defensive perspective, special teams perspective, we were a little bit all over the place, especially on offense and on special teams. You know, I think from a special team standpoint, you know, we had a going into it, their return units we knew were dangerous, and they proved that. You know, they proved it on the first punt of the game for us. We go three and out to start. We punt it right to Duff. He has a running start catching it, you know, returns it back to the nine, which leads him to a score. Second half kickoff, you know, we want to keep the ball away from Duff. Have two guys that are there. One of them runs the wrong lane, gives up, you know, he lets the returner cross his face to where he has no help. And, you know, we give up a kick return for a touchdown. So you look at those two plays, and they're obviously, you know, not what the standard of Ben Davis Football should be from a special teams perspective. We were able to block a punt in the first half at a critical time for us. And we, you know, unfortunately we didn't get any points out of it, but it was a momentum play, I think, and it was, you know, symbolic of the way our defense played in the first half. And you look at how that group played in the first half, you know, it's easy to say, well, you were down 21-0. Defense couldn't have played that good. But, you know, the reality is our defense gave up 90 yards on two plays and about 15 yards on 18 plays or 20 plays. So, like, our defense played extremely well. And really that's the number one thing you can point to is the reason we hadn't even had an opportunity to win the game. And it sounds crazy because people will say, well, you scored 29 in the second half. Your offense must have done well. Well, the reason we were able to score 29 is because our defense kept stacking stops, and that's all we had to score. You know, if our defense doesn't play the way they do and hold a explosive Lawrence Central team to under 200 yards of offense, we're not in that game. You know, we're not in that game at all. And it's a credit to Coach Sumner, Coach Henderson, Coach Zachary, Coach Gamble, Coach Suggs, Coach Mann. Those guys just kept coaching. Because when you're a teenager, you feel like you're doing your job and the other side of the ball is struggling a little bit, sometimes it's easy to get down. And not only did our coaches stay in it with our players, but the leadership of our players defensively, Cameron Davenport and Nylon Brown and Drew Evans and Sorrell Curtis, I mean, those guys kept the defense focused on doing its job. And that speaks volumes about our kids and our coaches, our ability for our defense to go out there and hold LC to 175 yards of total offense on the night and give our offense a chance, you know. And you look at the first half and you look at what we did offensively in the first half, and we had drive-killing moments. We ran a wrong route, which led to an interception. We had about seven missed assignments up front on the offensive line, which are drive killers. We had a penalty which kind of set us behind the chains. So a lot of self-inflicted wounds that didn't allow us to get into any type of rhythm or gain any type of momentum, you know, offensively. And you know, when you flip it to the second half, you know, our special teams didn't hurt us other than the opening kickoff of the second half. That was the one play that, you know, from a special team standpoint, that was huge. But offensively, we were able to get into a rhythm and establish some tempo and play with tempo. When we did that, that first scoring drive, the momentum, not just the momentum of the game, but just the energy level on our sideline and the focus within our entire sideline changed. And you could feel it. Didn't know that we were going to come all the way back, but felt like we could if we could continue just to stack stops. And that's what we talked to our defense about. We just talked to them about stacking stops. And then offensively, we had to continue to push tempo and stay in the rhythm that we were in.
Certainly, it's not a record that you want to set, Coach, but it was the largest comeback in the history of Ben Davis football, and that goes back to 1937. It's obviously, in retrospect, a record that you want to set because you don't want to lose in that situation, but not a situation where you want to be down 28 points and have to come back. Previous to that, I think it might be a game you remember as well, down to Carmel 24-0 a few years back, and Giants came back to win 28-24 in that game. But when you look at your team, obviously coming into the game, didn't know what they were going to have at the time, but they didn't have Bryson Luter, their starting quarterback, on the other side. You were missing a huge key to your offense in Marcus Reese. In the first half, it just seemed like maybe just completely a little bit out of sync offensively. How much was missing Marcus a part of that?
I think some of it is, some of it's kind of organic, right? I mean, you take away Marcus and you look at a guy that can go knock the top off, he can knock the top off of any defense in our league, really. He can make plays in the passing game and the underneath and the quick game stuff as well. And so he's such a weapon. And when you lose one of your weapons, it's always going to have an impact on you. The thing we talked about as an offensive staff at halftime was, we're averaging 3 yards per attempt. And that number is not characteristic of us using our entire system. And so, we had to push the ball down the field. We had to be more assertive with pushing the ball down the field in the second half. And, that allowed us to get our rhythm back. When we started being able to throw the ball in that intermediate window from 8 to 16 yards, you could see us, you could see that tempo come. You could see, Thomas got into a rhythm with it. And, we played differently. We looked differently, and we stressed them defensively more. And they were comfortable in the first half defensively, and we had to go challenge them and get them out of their comfort zone, and we were able to do that in the second half, and that led us to that really led us to getting back in the game.
Now, Coach, obviously, kind of a follow up to John Easter's question is that no Marcus Reese and a big guy that you had come in was Zane Skabinski, the junior. And he's pointing to me as I kind of
that was going to be the follow up that I kicked back to you. So there you go.
So Zane Skabinski with 2 touchdowns, one of them being a 60-yard touchdown. What was kind of the conversation to him before the game?
Conversation really wasn't any different, to be honest with you. I mean, he's a guy that obviously we have a great deal of confidence in. If we're putting guys on the field, we have confidence that they can go make plays and execute our offense. And it's funny because you look back over the years and the ball's going to find guys at different parts of the season. It always does. I mean, since I've been here, I've having conversations with Coach Ferris, the ball's going to go find itself. The ball's going to find who it needs to get to at different points of the year. Last year we were fortunate. We had 4 different receivers have at least one 100-yard game. Not everybody can say that, but it's just, again, it speaks to the system, and the system's going to find itself, and the ball's going to find where it needs to go, and whoever's on that end of the ball needs, we trust is going to go make the play for us. And so far this year, we now have 3 receivers that have hit that 100-yard mark in a game. And so I think it speaks to the depth that we're developing. But, it also speaks to Zane, the work he put in when he was out with a broken hand. He didn't sulk. He didn't pout. Put a lot of work into catching balls one-handed. Put a lot of work into hand-eye coordination. Put a lot of work into route running. And the ball found him on Friday night, and he stepped up and made some big-time catches for us. Go back to that last drive. Yeah, you can talk about the 60-yard touchdown, but he also had a 15-yard dig route on the final drive of the game. That was a huge play for us. And so, he has stepped up and made plays for us, and he's just another weapon for us here moving forward into the final game of the regular season and heading into the tournament.
Now, Coach, let's talk a little bit about that final drive. 1:50 or so to go. you stand 85 yards away from the end zone, and you need a touchdown and resulting two-point conversion as well to win the game. So what was the philosophy there on that last drive? Because a lot of people would say, well, they should throw the ball a lot, but actually it was a running game. Elijah Price was very key on that last drive.
Yeah, when you look at what LC moved to pretty quickly, the drive before, they showed us a three safety look. And when they did that, they took their boundary outside linebacker and expanded him over top of our single side receiver. That kind of gave us a little bit of a glimpse of what to expect. And so when they got soft defensively, that was our opportunity then to really run the football. And, you know, we threw it early. You know, I think we had a couple of, we got down to a fourth and five situation there. We ran a quarterback draw, barely got the first down, got up. We stuck the 15-yard dig to Zane. And then it was, you know, guys, here's the call. Like, and so we ran it, got a first down, clock stops. I think at that point we burned one of our timeouts, came back out of it. We knew we had one timeout left, had less than a minute to go. Had to make sure we pushed tempo. We gave our football team two calls, ran the ball again, got the ball to the plus side of the field. They had two players get hurt, so that gave us a free timeout. Really.
Yeah, I heard you talk about this on Bob Lovell.
It gave us a free timeout, and it really gave us a chance to kind of reset the script for us. And so during that injury time, we knew we were going to run the ball the next play in because it was going to be a quick whistle. The clock was going to start once the ready for play whistle was going to blow. So we walked our guys through that mechanic, right? Here's what's getting ready to happen. The umpire's going to stand over top of the ball. The white hat's going to back out. You know, we got to snap the ball as soon as the umpire gets out and you hear the whistle. Snap it and run a play. Elijah Price does an unbelievable job taking the run play out the backside and getting out of bounds, okay, which allowed us to keep that timeout into our pocket. And then the next play was already called. You know, it was, you know, we're going to load up and take a shot. And the shot to take was to the field, and it was to Nate Williams. And, you know, talking about it, it was, you know, if that's the shot we got to take, that's the shot we got to go make. We got to trust our guys and let it rip. And Thomas does a good job putting enough air on the ball to get it outside there, outside the numbers, to where it was truly just one-on-one. And Nate wins a 50-50 ball. And, you know, that's what has to happen for us. You know, if we're going to be successful, we have to trust our guys. And then they got to go answer the bell when their number's called. And Nate did a phenomenal job going up and getting that ball. And it's a big catch for him, and it's a catch he's probably needed, to be honest. And it was a huge play for us because it gave us the chunk play that we needed in order to have a scoring opportunity. So we used our last timeout after that play just to kind of resettle our guys emotionally, to set them up for what was next, and gave us an opportunity, one, to remind them that we were going to go for two because we had already told them, and two, it gave us a chance to get that touchdown call into Murph and just remind them, guys, we're going to score on this play, have enough poise to stay on the field and circle the wagons here a little bit. And, you know, our guys executed not only that touchdown play to Murph, but then they had enough poise to execute that, you know, to execute the two-point conversion as well.
Now, real quick, Coach, they always say go for the win at home, play for overtime on the road. You're home. You're playing for the Mick. What kind of was the reasoning of – I don't want to question a coach, but what kind of was the reasoning of going for two instead of kicking the extra point to tie it to force overtime?
It was really easy. After we scored our third touchdown and we were down 28-20, you know, it was right before the extra point. If you looked at their defensive demeanor was bad. They had 11 guys staring down at the field. Nobody was rallying each other up, and it was at that point I told our offensive coaches, give me our two best two-point calls. We need to go to work on that strategy here for about the next 30, 45 seconds before we get the next drive started. And, you know, and coached up, switched over to the defensive side of the headset and just asked if anybody had any objections whatsoever. And across the board on our staff, they just said we were going to go win it. And so our kids knew before they took the field, and our staff knew, you know, our staff was aligned. That we, once we scored, we were going to go for two in the win. And there was no hesitation on our part. And, you know, I think you got to make that decision ahead of time if you're a coach. If you get in the moment and try and make that decision, there's too many voices. And what happens is you get hung up on the emotion of it, and you're not coaching the actual situation. And so for us, we didn't want to make the decision based on emotion, one, and two, we wanted to make sure we were completely aligned and our players knew. So we weren't trying to get them refocused and resituated. And I think if you look at the poise that they executed those last two plays with offensively, you know, the touchdown to Murph and then the subsequent 2-point conversion, yeah, I mean our kids showed a great deal of poise.
And with that, we're going to end off the first half of Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Bear, Carpenter Realtors. We're going to come back, talk a little bit of sectional talk, and then preview the last game against North Central here on Indy's Giant 90.9.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
Her words weren't written under peaceful shade, but under fear for her life.
Everyone has inside a piece of good news.
For two agonizing years, she worried about being caught by the Nazis.
The good news is that you don't know how great you can be.
Though her story ended early, her words live on.
I don't think of all the misery, but of the beauty that still remains.
With her positive outlook, Anne Frank continues to fill us with hope. Hope. Pass it on from PassItOn.com.
Now back to Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Bear Realtor.
Welcome back to Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Bear, Carpenter Realtors. For the second half, real quick, we're going to preview the sectional draw came out on Sunday, and Ben Davis drew Brownsburg for their sectional 5. Now, Coach, you played the three sectional teams in the first 3 weeks. You went Brownsburg, Avon, Pike. You guys went 2-1 in those three games, and one loss went to Brownsburg. Now, obviously, you guys are a completely different team. You could say too. Run us through the draw against Brownsburg.
Yeah, it was one of those deals where we knew it was going to be a rematch, right? I mean, that was the obvious part. And so, you know, when you get to Sunday and you're waiting around to see what that draw looks like, There's a lot of things that can run through your mind, you know, just in terms of who, where, when. I think that probably behind the curtain, you know, in my world, it was I just wanted to know where we were going to play. And that's all that mattered to me, really, because, you know, at some point you're going to see a known opponent. Right. And so it was, you know, for me going into Sunday night and we talked about it Sunday morning in our staff meeting is, you know, we just got to figure out where we're going to play. You know, we had a plan for if we drew Pike, you know, this is what we were going to do. If we drew Avon, this is what we were going to do. If we drew, you know, Brownsburg, this is what we were going to do. We talked about if-then scenarios. That's probably the advantage. One of the advantages of being in 6A right now is that you do have a bye week. And so you can put a plan in place, you know, relative to who you draw. And make sure – you got to make sure your program gets exactly what it needs. During the bye week, you got to address your issues going into the tournament. But at the same time, in terms of having time to prepare for that opponent, you know, we already had a week. And so the focus for me has been making sure our guys know and understand the objective that lies ahead on Friday, making sure that we continue to handle fall break in a manner that allows us to get a little healthier and get better. And then, you know, when we wake up, when we go to, you know, when we get to 10 o'clock Friday night or 10:30 Friday night, then we can shift our focus towards that sectional round one opponent in Brownsburg. So I think I couldn't tell you. I know our players were talking about the sectional draw on Monday. They're going to continue to talk about the sectional draw. I think that's the nature of the teenagers. But, you know, for us, you know, as a coaching staff and even our player focus was better today in terms of just taking care of the things that are specific to North Central.
Now, as we move on to the game on Friday night, you get the North Central Panthers in the second longest running rivalry in Ben Davis football history. Giants and North Central have played every year since 1958, which is a long time. You know, you're going back almost what, 65 years or 66 years, somewhere in there.
64.
64 years. There you go. That's why you're here. I wanted to do the math quickly. You know, there have been a lot of ups and downs in this series over time, but it's kind of been dominated by Ben Davis recently. North Central, a program that just 2 years ago was playing you guys for the MIC championship, but they've kind of struggled the last 2 years. Coach Kevin O'Shea is one of the best to ever do it in Indiana. He's got state championships through his time at Lafayette Central Catholic. So talk about the Panthers heading into Friday night. Where are they as a football team? Obviously, they're struggling right now, but I mean, a wounded Panthers is maybe a little dangerous too.
Yeah, when you go back to 2018 when they made the run in the tournament and lost to Warren in the regional.
I mean, they were right there.
They were right there. They had every opportunity to win that game in 2018. Then 2019, played them here, and we were fortunate enough to come out with a victory and created a four-way tie for the MIC championship, which probably will never happen again. And then, you know, the last couple of years, we've had their number a little bit. And, yeah, when you look at him and you look at Coach O'Shea, he's a Hall of Fame coach in the state of Indiana. He's got a good coaching staff that they've prepared their guys week in and week out. You can turn it on film. They have a new little wrinkle on special teams every week. I think defensively they're playing hard. Offensively, they have some players that are dangerous. They just haven't been able to put it all together on one night. And, you know, that was the one thing we talked to our players about a little bit is, you know, it's easy to – you can get caught up looking at their record. I mean, you look at their non-conference games. One of them was Hamilton Southeastern, who's in the top four in 6A right now. They had Fishers as their other non-con game, who's in the top 10 in 6A right now. And then they've played the same schedule we have, you know, in terms of MIC opponents. And so they have not had an easy schedule in any way, shape, or form. But doesn't mean they're a bad football team either. You know, they have some good players on defense at every level, up front and at the linebacker level and in the secondary. They've had some quarterback, I think a little bit of a roller coaster at the quarterback position just because they've had to play a couple of guys due to injury throughout the year. They have some skilled players that are dangerous. They have some offensive linemen that are good-sized kids that are physical players. And so, you know, it's not for us, it's another MIC game, right? And you don't take MIC games lightly because you can get into any MIC game and anything can happen. They were right in it last week with Pike, had every opportunity to win that ball game until late. And so it's certainly a good football team that hasn't come across a lot of luck this year, but it's a football team that we're not taking lightly in any way, shape, or form.
And they probably have the best helmets in the MIC too. That matte black with the Panther on it is just amazing. Kind of on another note, obviously somebody who won't be there Friday night that anytime you go to North Central you think about is Paul Logan. And I know it is so strange to go up there and not see Paul Logan somewhere on the sidelines, and the former athletic director there passed away in 2020 from COVID. Talk about his effect still on that program as kind of the head Panther of all time.
Yeah, you know, he's had an impact on a lot of people in the MIC, you know, and I've told several people this, that if, you know, if Paul were still around and you know, some of the old guard of ADs were still around, we probably would still have an 8-team conference, you know. And, you know, it's that was a hard loss for not only their community, but I think for a lot of people in the state of Indiana. He was so instrumental at North Central and did everything for those kids in the community. His whole family did. You know, all three of his kiddos, Michael, Will, and Sammy, all graduated from North Central. You know, his wife Kathy, I mean, they were North Central through and through, and they had been North Central through and through since the 80s. And it's a family I've known actually since I was little. His, you know, Coach Logan's in-laws lived right across the street from my grandparents. And so I've known that family for a long, long time. And Paul's influence on the Indiana Football Coaches Association as well drove me to have an unbelievable relationship with him. And so he's missed at North Central for sure, but he's missed throughout the state of Indiana with the impact that he had on people.
Wow. I didn't know you had such a good connection with Paul Logan. Wow. But heading into this Friday's game, now, if Ben Davis wins this game, they're MIC champions outright. I believe the last time was 2017 when they went
2017
undefeated.
2017 would be the sixth time all time that the Giants have gone undefeated and won the MIC.
But if they lose that game it will be a tie, a share with Lawrence Central as they are 4-1. That would make Ben Davis 4-1 as they play a non-conference. I know you hate it, Carmel.
And no tiebreaker in the mix.
And no tiebreaker.
Still don't get.
But going into that game, I know you want to treat it as every other game. Like you said, the Mick game you take very seriously. But to be a Mick champ outright by yourself, what's that going into this Friday's game?
Hadn't been really a huge conversation with our players because they all know the stakes that are at hand, right? It was pretty well talked about last week. We had to set the record straight when everybody called it a Mick championship game. It was like, guys, you know, this is their last Mick game. For them, it is a Mick championship game. For you, it's an opportunity to keep yourself in the first place. So just keep your blinders on, you know, keep your earbuds in and just stay the course with work. And all of it's going to take care of itself. If we go up there and play like we're capable of playing and we're fortunate to come out with a win up at North Central on Friday, then we can congratulate our guys for being Mick champions and then we can go to work on our next sectional opponent. But the task at hand and the goal for us is to continue to get better. You know, we left a lot on the table Friday, just in terms of areas of growth, and so that's been as much of a point of emphasis for us as you know, winning a Mick championship has been.
I think you talked about it a little bit there, but obviously, you know, the first question coming back from break was about Brownsburg. So how do you keep the team, or can you keep the team from looking ahead to 2 weeks from now? And also, one thing I think Jeff would ask about if he were here, Jeff Robinson, one of our cast members here on Inside Ben Davis Football, he always talks about how Mike Kirshner, when he was coach here, did not like fall break. So how do you keep your team focused going into this week and then trying to keep them from thinking too much about that sectional matchup that's sitting there?
Well, I think, you know, I love fall break, to be honest with you. I think it's it comes at a perfect time for our program. I feel like we've had a really good recipe the last 4 years. With fall break, we've had a really good plan. Our coaching staff has done a great job of owning that plan, and our players have taken a great deal of ownership in it. You know, we've talked to them every year, and we've hammered it home the first 2 days of fall break here about, you know, you got to make sure you own the weight room. And we're driving them in the weight room right now because it's an opportunity for them to build their body armor back up. They get an opportunity, some of the wear and tear that the season's put on them, they have an opportunity to get some of that back. They're not sitting around in a school desk all day. So we lift, we practice, we feed them, and then we get them out of here. And then it's on them. They got to take ownership of their own bodies at that point. And part of that ownership is making sure you stay hydrated, is making sure you're eating, and making sure you're getting plenty of rest. And fall break gives us an opportunity to do all three of those things. And knock on wood, we've been fortunate the last 4 years to get healthier throughout fall break. And you know, that's certainly in our and it's in the cards this week for us. You know, we got to continue to work in the weight room. We got to work on the practice field. But when we're not in those two areas, you know, we got to continue to get healthy and get better and give our chance, you know, give ourselves a chance to be as healthy as we can be going into the tournament.
Coach, Jeff asked the question a couple weeks. John asked a question a couple weeks. I've never asked a question. I don't have one because I haven't really been around the broadcasting side of North Central. But what's your favorite North Central memory?
Good one.
You know, we went up there in 2018, and the weather was about as miserable as it could be. It was coming down at about a 45-degree angle.
It
was freezing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sleet. It was freezing rain. It wasn't a good memory because we did not play as well as we needed to come out with a win. But that, you know, you take that weather memory. Going to North Central, I would say 2007. Would be my best memory going to North Central. We went up there and early in the season. We used to play them about week
third three. Game. Yeah.
They used to be our first conference game of the year, and we went up there in 2007 and moved Tandon Doss to tailback that game because the week before we lost Phil Dudley and Miles Wright up at Penn, and Tandon exploded. He not only played wide receiver, but he also played some tailback and. He had an unbelievable game that night, if I remember right, and it was early in the season, so the weather was beautiful.
And coach,
that game a couple years ago too, or the Mick championship probably was pretty good.
That was here. That was 2019. Yeah, certainly that game for sure. But in terms of going up to North Central, probably 2007. But you talk about 2019 group was a special group to coach. And for them to be able to leave Mick champions was pretty special, especially after the way we started the year.
A great football game.
Now, Coach, for all the fans that are here and not out on vacation or for fall break, what are your words to the Purple Rain showing up for really the Giants Mick Championship?
Yeah, show up and show out. I mean, it's a great group of kids. They've competed their rear ends off. We were grateful for the people that stayed with us on Friday and didn't leave early. We had a great crowd at the end of the game that was there to help kind of pull us through towards the end. And, just continue to do the same. Continue to rally around these guys and do everything you can to have their back. And we're going to do everything we can to reward everybody with a Ben Davis football, with a performance that meets the standard of Ben Davis football.
So check it out. The Giants will travel to 86th Street to take on the North Central Panthers on Friday. The Giants win their outright Mick champion. So check out that game. Pre-game starts at 6:15, kickoff at 7. And no show next week. Yeah, I forgot about that. No show next week. But after that, we will have a show previewing the sectional game. But yeah, travel there. Pre-game at 6:15, kickoff at 7. Owen Pulley and Garrett Burkle on that call. Thanks for listening to another episode of Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Baer, Carpenter Realtors.
This has been a presentation of the Ben Davis Sports Radio Network.